Some of the world's greatest stories are told through song. We tell the stories about those who give us these songs. Not all the songs are great, but God damn, do these guys make it interesting. You are now listening to Voluble Radio Podcast.
Pixies are one of those bands that I think me and you kind of agree upon.
Yeah, you actually got me into them. Because I've always heard of them, but I never, like, had anything. And then you gave me this crappy burnt CD that you had. And you're like, here, you got to listen to
this. I
think
it was like half Doolittle, half Surfer Rosa.
I think it was just both Doolittle and Surfer Rosa.
Okay, gotcha.
And I think the Doolittle worked, and I loved it. But I think the Surfer Rosa was fucked and it wouldn't play.
Right.
So I didn't hear that until later on.
And then you listen back to it, you're like, no, it's just really artful.
Yeah,
the second half is all fucked up. You're like, I'm like, no, just go back and listen again. Trust me, it takes about eight times, and then you'll start to get it.
No, I think I like that right off the bat.
Surfer Rosa, yeah. Right? Yeah, Surfer.
Doolittle got me. That was the first one I heard, and I was hooked right there. But I think that's the one you need to hear first to get into them. Because it's like the kind of poppiest and most easily listenable. And that gets you into them, and then everything else.
Because Doolittle's got songs like Hey. Which was in, what's
Here
that?
Comes Your Man, for Christ's sake.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely like a, you could hear any one of those songs on MTV or something like that, you know?
I love, though, in the video, they didn't want to lip sync, so they just had their mouths open. So every time they were supposed to sing, they just had their mouths open and wouldn't lip sync. So that was one of the things they would never do.
Yeah, they were, Pixies are a weird fucking band, dude. They actually, I got into the Pixies probably like high school, you know? Like, I think what got me into the Pixies is probably Nirvana, right? And then that's another thing too. Researching the Pixies, the one thing I hate about researching the Pixies, besides all the reading, is that you can't see the name Pixies on the internet without being like, and Kurt Cobain was inspired by this album.
It was pretty funny because I sent you guys Santiago.
Yeah, Joey Santiago.
The guitar player. He was just on the Matt Pinfield podcast.
I didn't get a chance to listen to it.
And he refers to Kurt Cobain as, was it Kurt Corbin?
No, he doesn't.
So he says Corbain. And he also says, you know, their song Teenage Spirit. And so I just thought that was kind of funny that he was like, yeah, no, I love the fact that I love Nirvana and this and that. But he said, then Teenage Spirit. And then later on called him Chris Corbin or Kurt Corbin.
I love Nerve Mania.
Yeah.
Matt Pinfield's, I don't know. How do you like him?
I like him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He kind of irritates me a little bit.
Oh, you son of a bitch.
You know what irritates me about Matt Pinfield is
a podcast called 120 Minutes or 2 hours
of
Matt Pinfield.
No, it's not.
Like an hour long at that. They're never 2 hours.
I was going to say, he always has a neutral stance on he's like a big fan of everybody.
Everything. Because he's on Limp Bizkit's the second album.
You guys are really fucking talented. And the thing I don't like about it, fuck Matt Tree Boys. Limp Bizkit's where it's at.
That's what he's saying on the end of that.
Oh, boy.
So you're like, all your credibility is kind of gone, dude.
But, you got that Nirvana thing, right? So I always feel bad for the Pixies because they can't get away from the Nirvana thing at all. Like, it's because they kind
of after a while of a fan of it, you don't even think of it. Like,
I agree.
I never think of Nirvana when I hear them because they're so much better than Nirvana.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, Nirvana didn't do it as good, so it's not even comparable.
Yeah.
Even though they were bigger, obviously.
Right.
I don't give a shit.
Like, it kind of seems that, you know, the Pixies sort of start to break up, and then Nirvana's like, yes, please, and scoops their fucking sound.
Well, they broke up in 93, and then he was dead in 94, so.
Yeah, true. But, you know, I mean, we'll get into it in the timeline, I guess, but you could hear where the shift in the sound of this band happens.
Oh, yeah.
You know
what once
I mean?
The 90s hit, basically.
Yeah. And you know what so Nirvana gets me into the Pixies, and then what I love about the Pixies is they got me into a lot of weird music because they were really super weird.
Yeah, I don't really like their weird shit, though. Like,
I love their weird shit.
You're into the weirder shit. I'm into more just the rockin'.
Yeah, you like more of, like, the pop melodies of it. And I like more of, like, the dissidence and all the weird shit.
Yeah, yeah,
Do you know the song I Bleed?
Yeah.
Okay, so you know that perfect example of what I love about the Pixies is at the end, Kim Deal does that. Yeah, that, and it's all these weird intervals she's hitting as Frank Black singing a steady melody, and I'm like, that is so cool, man.
Yeah, yeah, that is good.
Yeah, I was gonna say too, the Pixies to me is no Kim Deal, like, you know,
you ain't got nothing.
You
she
got
really
nothing.
Did do it.
There's something,
whether or not she, because she got pissed because she never was able to allowed to write the stuff, so it was Frank Black writing it all for her.
Mm-hmm.
But. That worked so good to put her in with it and doing the back. It's
their harmony is perfect.
Yeah, without her, it would be just another generic kind of band.
They kind of had a look about them too, the Pixies. It wasn't just
it's
their sound.
It's kind of just like not grunge, kind of just who gives a fuck. Mm-hmm. Like, this is what we were wearing. This is what we're gonna just wear, and
I feel like
put no thought into it, which kind of makes it.
The Velvet Underground are kind of to punk what the Pixies are to grunge.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say, like, you saying, like, not quite grunge, that makes perfect
sense. They kind of started it, but they're not really it.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. They're proto-grunge.
Yeah.
That's the word. But they, like, Joey Santiago, to me, the guitar player, right?
Yeah.
He was kind of like the preppy guy in the band.
Yeah, he was kind of the most normal, kind of just most simple-minded, not simple-minded, but just straightforward kind of...
Yeah. And he's
honest working guy.
And the guys are all fucking head cases in the band, too. And I feel like he's the least crazy out of all of them. He seems the most normal, you know? Like, in the, and we'll get into it, but the quiet, loud, quiet. No, loud,
yeah.
Loud, quiet, loud.
Quiet, loud,
quiet.
I don't know.
Yeah, it's the documentary about them getting back together.
You think we'd write it down?
Yeah. And, like, you see him in that documentary, and he's, like, got the kids and everything. And, you know, he just seems like a normal fucking guy, you know?
I got a bunch of tweets complaining they could hear you vaping on mic, they were saying.
Is that right?
No, I don't have anything. But I could tell last time.
Yeah. Because it was a little like,
so, randomly you would just be talking like this. And,
yeah, yeah.
So what are you guys thinking? And kind of get normal.
loud, quiet, loud.
Loud, quiet, loud.
Loud, quiet, loud.
Yeah. Frank Black is kind of like the art nerd.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
it's kind of his way or the his way. Wait, that don't work.
So, yeah. So, like, Frank Black's like that kind of artsy, nerdy type and super religious, too.
He was when he was younger.
Yeah. And we'll get into some of that. David Lovering, he's the creep of the band.
He is the creep. You mean scientific phenomenalist?
Yeah. So, David, the drummer, like, ends up becoming a magician at some point.
I guess we'll get into that later.
We'll get into that. And then Kim Deal is the rock and roll in the band.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? She,
although in that Loud, Quiet, Loud, she's sober, but she's still drinking all NA beers. And then they're like, oh, this is the first time we're going to New York sober.
Yeah, that
and
was
they're
weird.
Like, oh, my God, it is. So it's all about being sober. But if she's saying it, hey.
You know, just an observation for, with Kim Deal and her not drinking and staying sober, she's like just as obsessed with not drinking as she is drinking.
Yeah, that's basically what it is.
Yeah, because everything
over.
She's got to like check the label and see the proof on the beer to make sure that's just under the proof, so she's not drinking real beers.
Like, hey, dude, this beer's all. She's like Spicoli the way she talks, and like all of a sudden, they were gone.
Yeah. She talks. There's a track on Surfer Rosa where she's like, and then the next thing you know, and she really does talk like that. Yeah. Like, wow, crazy shit. And also in the documentary, she had to keep her sister, her twin sister, with her the whole time.
Kelly Deal.
To keep her sober.
Yeah.
And I thought, because she's living with her parents in the documentary. In the documentary, the Pixies.
And the documentary came out in like 2005 or something. It was right
2004,
after,
yeah.
Yeah, right after
the reunion. And I saw that like Kim was living back with her parents at this point, and I thought it was because she needed to be sober.
That's what I thought.
But I looked into it, and you know what? The documentary made it seem that way, and the Pixies even said like they didn't like the way the documentary made things seem. They made Kim look like she was like always clutching a non-alcoholic beer and smoking a cigarette. And
she was smoking constantly.
Yeah, which is kind of badass. I was like, fuck yeah. And
she has such beautiful vocals and still smokes.
Yeah, her voice is fucking amazing, dude. I really do like her voice a lot. The twin sister. So she's living with the parents because her mother has Alzheimer's.
Oh.
So I looked into it. So she lives with her parents in Ohio. That's where they're from originally. And Kim has a house either right next door or right around the corner. And the sister has a house right around the corner from that. And all three of them are fucking beautiful houses. And the middle house, Kim's house, is used just for recording because she plays with her sister.
Yeah, the breeders.
In the breeders, yeah. So I thought that was kind of cool, too. Yeah, you know, Kim, too, she's, like, loved and revered by, like, nerdy art girls, too, which I think is really fucking cool. I think she said
Yeah, in the thing, there's, like, a bunch of them trying to give her stuff and, like, yeah. Just, like, trying to talk to her and
see
one
girl in the documentary was just like, please, Kim, please take my book. And it was a book that mentions the Pixies as the coolest band ever. Yeah. And I'm like, fuck yeah, Kim Deal. You are awesome. Like, you set a good example for girls.
Yeah,
like,
except for the alcoholic thing.
Yeah, except for the alcoholic
thing. Constantly smoking.
And the constantly smoking thing. And just being addicted to pills, maybe, or something. Yeah. I kind of got a little bit of a crush on fucking Kim Dirt while watching all the shit we...
I got a crush on Lovering. It's so weird.
Because he's a creepy science guy.
Mm-hmm. Just like my buddy Bill.
Mm-hmm. And speaking about him being a creep, you watched that documentary, too, about them on the road.
From 89, I think, footage.
Go for it. So it's a documentary in 89. Right?
And it's just like a cameraman just talking to him like it's a camcorder. It's not like really...
And they're on tour stuff. In Europe, so
They're on tour in Europe, and he's holding up a piece of paper. David?
Yeah, Lovering? David Lovering, yeah.
Holding up the piece of paper. Yeah. And it's got an address on it, and it's from, like, apparently a 12-year-old girl gave her.
Yeah, 12-year-old Italian girl gave him the address. And he's,
and
like,
Kim's making fun of him.
Well, he's all proud of it, too, because he's like, oh, what am I going to do with this? Like,
yeah.
What the fuck?
It's like, those girls were, like, 12, and Kim's, like, just giving him grief, as she should be.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And, yeah, it's pretty creepy.
Oh, that was really fucking funny. And, yeah, so that kind of creeped me out. And then what's cool, too, is, like, in that old documentary, you could see that, I guess it's not cool, but it's truthful that the thing with the Pixies is, like, they don't really communicate well with each other at all.
Yeah, apparently not.
They don't, like, they'll be in the green room or in their dressing room before, and none of them are talking. They're just sitting
there.
They're
sitting there quietly, and if they are talking, it's so forced. Like, when Frank Black was doing the card trick for...
I was about to say that, yeah.
For showing the Lovering, the card trick, it was just so awkward.
Yeah. Yeah, because Lovering's, like, all about magic, so Frank's trying to show him, like, a magic trick.
And he's getting it wrong.
He gets it wrong, yeah. And, yeah, it is really fucking forced and awkward. Even, like, Kim... And there's another part in the documentary, too. You know what? Let's just jump into
Let's go back a little bit.
Yeah, let's
start at UMass. Oh, wait, yeah. Or before then?
Before then, yeah. Just before we get into the timeline here, I did watch this thing in 89... Frank Black was being interviewed and they asked him if the Pixies would break up in their prime, and that was like before they even like kind of really broke.
Yeah,
you know, and I thought that was weird that people were asking them before they're even a thing if they broke up, and it plays out a lot in the story. I just thought, I was like, wow, that's foreshadowing right there.
Yeah,
he's like, the cool thing to do would be to break up now, but, and I'm like, yeah, I kind of agree with you here actually. But so basically, where it starts is with Frank Black, a.k.a. Black Francis.
A.k.a.
Charles Michael Kittredge Thomas the IV.
You fucking asshole. I hate that name. And I call myself Frank Black, too, or Black Francis, or whatever the fuck.
Well, did you see why he started calling himself Black Francis?
Because he was colorblind and he didn't see that he was white.
Because his father said that if he had another son, he'd name his other son Black Francis. Yeah. And there's like this weird thing where his father kind of like wasn't in his life.
All right.
Yeah. I don't want to say abandoned him, but like he wasn't around, you know? All right. And but he was born in 65 in Boston. And his father, I think he was in real estate, but he was really doing well in real estate. He said something about having properties on both coasts. So the family would move from the East Coast to the West Coast back and forth a lot.
Yeah.
So he was born in Boston. The family moves out to California. But his parents do split up when he's like six. And his mother basically remarries like this religious guy that's some, I think it's like evangelical. You know what I mean? Like, evangelical will be like what? Like the TV one?
I have no idea.
I think it's that
one. Like the holding hands and waving back and forth or something.
Yeah, it's like, I think evangelical is the one where you when you turn on TV and it's like that futuristic kind of looking church and the preacher's in there.
My Lord tells me.
Yeah, stuff like that. Yeah, so. Now yeah, anyway, yeah, the stepfather was like
super. Now we're just guessing.
Yeah, I know. Now it's shots in the dark. I think there's like crystals in the church.
They worship like a mummy or something.
Worship Jesus Lizard.
Doesn't.
Yeah, exactly. Great man. Yeah, Rich, don't even. Yeah, Rich's phone just blew up searching evangelical culture.
Just one word. Trans-denominational.
Trans-denominational church. Okay. Yeah, so mixed with, like, Protestant.
Oh, gross.
So, yeah, so, you know, Charles. And it's weird because everybody calls him Charles in his real life.
Yeah.
And you'll see fans passing by on the street and just be like, Frank Black, we love you, or Black Francis, you're the best. He's like, yeah, okay, whatever. But, yeah, so what's it called? So, yeah, they're in the church when he's about 12. And, you know, what's weird is that I in all the interviews that I was watching with him, especially early on, like when they blow up in England first.
Yeah.
He's, like, hard-pressed about this religious upbringing. And I don't know why. I'm like, it's not that big.
He keeps bringing it up?
No. The press keeps bringing it up to him.
All right.
Because, and this is what's cool about the Pixies, too. Their lyrics are fucking so weird. And
I don't know what any of their songs are about.
There's a lot of, like, weird religious, like, overtones.
That's what I'm told. I'm terrible at lyrics or knowing what songs are about. So I just like the way they sound. And I don't know what a fucking thing he says is.
And that's another thing, too, like, with his vocal style, he's kind of, like, sometimes singing, sometimes screaming. Sometimes talking or just yelling atonally.
As loud as hell.
And it was just a mishmash of different fucking weird styles. But, you know, so people keep pressing him about this religious thing. And, you know, his response is like, look, man, we got, like, two songs in Spanish. Are we also a Latin band? You know what I mean? Like, give me a fucking break. Like, great. We're the fucking Pixies. We're weird. Like, we just have weird shit in our songs, man, yeah. You know? But the two songs that I saw that did have religious, like, tones to them were Gouge Away.
Oh, really?
So Gouge Away.
I guess, yeah, that's like sloth or whatever.
Well, it's in reference to the story of Samson from, I guess it's the Old Testament. And it's about Samson being chained to the pillars, and he has both his eyes gouged out by his enemies.
Jesus.
But then he brings the pillars down and kills all his enemies. But in the lyric that I found that was in reference to it was, you break my arms, you spoon my eyes out. You break my arms, you spoon my eyes. And I was just like, oh, that's really interesting.
What about the marijuana?
It's not about Samson. It's just he makes references.
All right, you feel what
I'm trying to say?
There's even less religion than you're thinking.
And then I was also thinking...
Judge Dredd.
Oh, what is it? Book of Judges. Thank you, Richie.
And he will strike thee down with great vengeance and rage.
Yeah. And at the end of it, the wallet that says motherfucker on it. And then I was also thinking this monkey's gone to heaven also has that kind of religion to it, you know? And if you look into it, there's a few more. But, you know, he also had songs about, like, incest and shit. He had, like, a lot of weird... You know that song, like, You Are the Sun?
Faces Being Broken? Yeah.
Motherfucker. That song's amazing, by the way. I love that song. But, yeah, the Faces Being Broken thing, too, is, like, very surrealistic. So it was, like, kind of like a blend of... More or less, it seems like a David Lynch movie put to music.
Yeah, but more comprehensible.
Yes. Yeah.
Beginning, middle, end, that makes sense.
Exactly. It follow. I wouldn't say maybe not more of a linear story plot, but more pop accessible where people can understand them. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but by the time he's 13, he's going to this religious camp and he gets into this Christian rock songwriter, Larry Norman. And Larry Norman had this thing where he was, I'm going to put a link to him in the show notes. So if you guys want to listen to him, go to volleyballradio.com. But he's kind of like a Christian Rolling Stones, which I thought was kind of interesting. And you can actually hear Frank Black in his voice. You can hear where he gets the influence from. And his big catchphrase was "Come on, Pilgrim," because so that's like their first EP too. Yeah. But "Come on, Pilgrim," Larry Norman's reference was like "Come on, Pilgrim, you know he loves you," meaning Jesus Christ.
I thought they wanted a pilgrim to like come on their back or something.
Yeah, that's what I thought too. So then the family moves to Massachusetts. And this is where Frank, or Black Francis, goes to high school. I guess he's just Charles at this point, right? And this is where Charles goes to high school, and he discovers punk rock for the first time. So up to this point, he's only listening to, like, Christian rock and, like, 60s folk music.
All right.
Yeah.
I can get that, though, from the sound.
Yeah.
Kind of makes sense.
Because he's the guy that's playing the acoustic guitar on stage. Or sometimes he plays that Telecaster, too, but it's mostly the acoustic. While he's in high school, too, he's also he's putting out, like, demos for himself, like, as himself. And you could hear a lot of, you know, what his music's going to sound like in the demos. They're not very good demos, but he wins, like, Student of the Year or something
Yeah, I heard he starts writing a couple of the songs that later become albums.
I think Here Comes Your Man was in those beginning... sessions. So it's kind of crazy that, you know, he went to this religious camp and it inspired him to not be more religious. Because when I was growing up with this band in high school, I never got the feel like, oh, he's trying to sell me on religion.
Yeah.
I just figured that I'm like, okay, you're just being like an artist and looking at it.
I had no idea it had anything to do with religion until I read about it recently for this.
Really, really?
Never had any clue there was any religion aspect whatsoever.
I always had that feel with them too.
Yeah,
I don't know why. Because, I mean, like, it's because of this band that I even got into, like, David Lynch or any of that shit. And I don't even really like David Lynch very much, but I only watched, like, Blue Velvet and shit like that because I knew the Pixies were very into them, you know.
That's an awful reason to watch a bad movie.
You didn't like Blue Velvet?
No, it tries too hard.
Yeah, I kind of get that feel, too. I just kind of like Dennis Hopper.
Yeah, that's what's trying too hard.
That's what makes it great, though.
You might as well be cutting down fucking pillars with two chainsaws at once.
Yeah,
that's like another Texas Chainsaw 2.
That's why I love fucking what's his
it's
name.
It's just too over the top.
That's how could our what's it, Mario Brothers the movie.
Now that's he's perfect then.
I saw this great tweet.
That and Speed.
Everybody is comparing the Trump presidency to 1984, but let's call it what it really is, the Super Mario Brothers, the live action movie. I wish I could remember who tweeted that. Give him credit.
Credit. Give the little guy some credit.
Yeah. But then after Frank, or Charles, I'm sorry. I thought his name was Buff Bagwell before this podcast. But after... Charles graduated. Okay.
Sorry. Go ahead.
So after Charles graduates high school, he goes to college.
UMass.
Yeah, University of Massachusetts in...
And where's that?
Amherst.
Oh, all right.
Yeah. And this is where he meets Fucci. This is where he meets future guitarist for the Pixies, Joey Santiago. And...
Santiago.
And, when Charles gets there, he initially is dorming right across the hall from Joey. And Joey.
He was saying he was cooking all that ethnic food and it would stink up the hallways.
Oh, man, that's... Jesus Christ. Now I just got super fucking depressed.
but his island skin looks nice and hot. I forget that line. Your island skin looks nice and hot. Oh, Bonehead Little Machine.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Something about
your skin, your Irish skin.
Iris?
He says, your Irish skin
I
looks.
I thought island skin.
Your Irish skin looks Mexican. That's what they're saying. But the way they break the lyric up is so fucking cool, man. Like,
I thought he was saying, your island skin looks
your
nice
skin
and hot or
looks
something.
Looks Mexican. That's what, how they. Oh, dude, that song's amazing. But, yeah, so they're dorming across the hall from each other, and Joey overhears Frank jamming with his roommate. You know what I mean? So he comes over and brings his guitar, and then he starts turning Frank starts turning Charles onto like 1970s punk and David Bowie. So I read too that Joey himself wasn't really a punk rocker, that like around this time, we're talking like 86 right now. Around this time, he like couldn't get into punk clubs because
this is more like 84-ish.
Yeah,
when they first started,
yeah,
it's like a little bit earlier than 86. I think Kim and them. I think the Pixies start in 86.
Yeah, yeah.
So this,
yeah.
I think it was like 84.
It was like 84. Yeah, 84. So I read this thing that Joey couldn't get into punk clubs because he had a bunch of hand-me-downs that were the, what is it, Lacoste, the alligator.
Yeah.
And there's like big signs all over every punk venue in the Boston area right there that said no crocodiles.
Wow.
Yeah. And he couldn't get in because all his clothes were hand-me-downs because he had like 8 or 9 brothers or sisters. Yeah. So he, and I love Joey.
I love how they're punk yet they're fucking elitist at the same time.
Kinda. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's a little.
Kinda. A little bit. But I thought that was kind of funny. And but the following semester, Joey and Charles are now dorming together. And this is where they
start dating.
This is where they start dating. And what's it called? What was I going to say here?
When is Francis or Charles or whatever the fuck he wants to call himself go to, where does he go, to Puerto Rico?
So this is what happens. So they start rooming together. Black Francis starts playing Joey all the songs that he's been writing at this point. Joey starts putting guitar to it. And then the next semester, it's something to do with his major or something. He switched. He went to school, I think, for anthropology. But then I think he switched to Spanish or something. Because then to finish his degree, he had to go to Puerto Rico for 6 months. Where he was living with this like roommate who he called a weirdo psycho gay.
Is that Crickety Jones?
Yeah, Crickety Jones. And this. So, yeah. So then he moves to Puerto Rico, Charles. And he's got this psycho roommate that would go on and on about the Flintstones and talk about voices in his head and shit. And, yes. Yeah, so, needless to say, you know, I feel like Charles gets disenfranchised with the whole idea of college and everything. And he writes Joey a letter and he goes, hey, Joey, this is our time to do it. Let's go for our dreams. Let's do the band thing. And then Joey writes him back like, yes, let's. And then now Black Francis and Joey meet back up in Massachusetts. The two of them just drop out of school altogether and they get an apartment. And then
they really start hitting it off hot and heavy.
Yeah, now they start getting hot and heavy with each other. And then Charles gets a job in a factory, and I think he looks at over the buttons that go on like a teddy bear or something like that. I have no idea. He's such a weird guy. I don't know what's real with him and what's not real, you know?
Even in the documentary, he was talking something. You could tell. I think it was a lie. He's like, yeah, I slept on that bench when I was homeless. And they're like, you were homeless? And he's like, I had a lease run out, and I had like a day, and so stayed up all night. And you're like, yeah, that's not being homeless
then. Dude. Yeah. I thought the same exact thing.
Like, while he was saying, I was kind of like, I don't
know. You weren't homeless.
Realized you're caught now.
Yep. And then, yeah, so now that they're living together, I thought this was cool, too, because Charles, he goes to work, he comes home, he writes songs, plays music. Like, literally all his free time is just playing music. That's all he does. And same thing with Joe.
Should we quit track and field? Oh, wait, no, he was a sloppy piece of shit. Never mind.
yes. But after a while, after they kind of build up their repertoire of songs,
repertoire,
they put the ad out for a female bassist. And that's into 1960s folk music.
Husker Du. And like 7 Mary 3.
Yeah, something like
no,
that.
It's like Peter Paul and Mary.
Peter Paul and Mary. And also has no chops.
And likes Godsmack.
And likes Godsmack, yeah.
Because that was a big influence on the Pixies.
I thought it was weird, too, that they put down no chops. I was just like...
Muttons or pork?
Like, you know, chop chops.
Oh, all right.
No pork chops. But, yeah, they made Kim Deal shave her sideburns to get into the band.
That's how the hipster look with the side shaves got from.
Ooh, I got that. I get that now.
Not... Mark from Home Improvement.
Okay, cool.
Oh, wait, no, Mark is the one, the older one. Whatever the fuck his
Zach?
Name was. Zach. No, that was his real name. Zachary Tybree.
Oh, true.
Or something. But this is getting cut out, so it don't matter.
But, so, Yeah, so the only person to answer the ad is Kim Deal, and of course she shows up with no bass.
And he's like, well, okay, I meant no chops. I didn't mean none.
No, I didn't mean no bass. But she just shows up with no bass, but she's the only one that ends up answering the ad. And she likes Frank Black's songs, so they're like, okay, you got the job. And I think she ends up borrowing her first bass from her twin sister. And which
Kelly.
And it's crazy. The sisters are not only like super musically talented, but they're also like ridiculously smart too. I looked into.
I was listening to Kim Deal's "What the Fuck" she was on,
mm-hmm.
and I was kind of just zoning in and out because mm-hmm. she didn't talk about the Pixies really. There was just like mm-hmm. a quick, and then I was in the Pixies, and then left, and then and she'd be talking about the Breeders more and everything.
Right,
which
right,
I
right.
Her
that's
band.
Her thing. Yeah, that's
but
her thing.
The only reason why you're doing Breeders or anyone knows of it is because you were in the Pixies. I feel so.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of stuff
she
in here.
Glosses over that.
Well, there's a lot of stuff in here where Frank Black like takes a stranglehold on this band, and it's his vision. And she
physically choked all three of them at once with his huge hands.
There's a part in the documentary, speaking of huge hands, where it shows a very normal Frank Black, and he's just like sitting there drinking cappuccino, like one of those tiny cups. But I was just laughing because I'm like, the cup looks so tiny in his hand. It's like so
thimble.
Yeah, it's like. I thought that was really fucking cute.
fucking cute.
But yeah, they're also really fucking smart. Their father was a laser physicist for the Air Force.
Typical.
Yeah, and an episode we got to do is how many musicians' parents are in the military. You'd be surprised. It's more than you think. I'm like, wow, that's fucking weird. Like the Blink-182 guy and stuff. But whatever that weirdo's name is, Tom DeLonge. Yeah. both girls were trained in music from as early as like 5 years old. So they were, and I would imagine they were both classically trained too, because they have
chops.
Yeah.
So is it safe to say they do have chops? And she was lying.
Yeah, no, she's got some serious chops. Like when you watch for like vocalists when they sing each vowel, there's a certain like muscular structure you put in your face and your mouth, like to move your lips around the vowel. And if you look,
kind of like talking.
No. Kind of like, I don't know how to really describe it, but like kind of in
but
a
maybe
way,
you shouldn't.
Kind of in a way where the music come through and you're molding your mouth around just the noise coming out of you. Very strange.
The way David Levering fills up that drum with the
yeah,
smoke and pops it out.
When
kind
he
like
does
that.
When
he does his magic show.
Yeah,
all right.
Sort of like that. But like if you watch their performance and any vocalists out there, I would advise people to watch for just the way she sings in her mouth specifically is really clean.
I think you just have an obsession with her mouth. You're like, oh,
I do
kind of.
She's so talented and I just fucking want to just smoke her cigarettes and drink her beers.
Drink her NAs.
Exactly. Can I buy you an NA? She's like, fuck you, pussy, and just punches me in the face. She looks like she could probably kick my ass, actually.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Kim Deal looks like a fucking badass.
She could take a hit, I bet.
Yeah, and she could probably throw a fucking punch, too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and then before she was even in the Pixies, I'm sorry, so they're like classically trained from a young age. The Breeders actually started in high school for her. Her and her sister started a folk band called the Breeders.
All right.
And before she was in the Pixies, she was working in cellular biology and working out of like biochem labs. So I'm like, she's a pretty smart cookie, this Kim Deal.
Got such a boner for her.
Yeah, kind of.
Using cute words like cookie.
She's my little cookie. I don't know. But the three.
But let me tell you about the patootie on her.
Yeah. I'm going to cut out all the misogyny out of this. Don't worry. So the three start jamming in Kim's apartment. And the three of them are in Kim's apartment jamming, and they try to get Kelly to play drums initially, her twin sister.
Yeah.
But she really isn't that good at drums. Like, they can play guitar at this point.
Mm, so they're not musical virtuosos, like you were just saying.
Well, I'm sure she could play drums, but just not to what they're looking for, you know? And what happens is Kim is married at the time, and her husband suggests David Levering, who's his friend, who she met at their wedding reception.
Mm.
And so then the group The four of them start jamming together. I think they get a practice space at first, kind of like the one that I had back in the day.
Yeah, they were saying how when it rained, it would have all these gnats coming out of the sewer.
Sewer drain, yeah.
Yeah, so they and then they'd be biting Kim, and she had to go to the doctor and everything.
I know exactly what this probably looked like. It was like probably like a warehouse building, and it was a room that you can rent out. Mm-hmm. I rented out something very similar that got flooded out. All the fucking, in Union City here in Jersey, all the other practice spaces got flooded out except for ours. It stopped raining.
That was where you were selling the drugs out of?
Yeah.
All right.
Where I was selling
that's
the drugs
right.
out of. Right. Yeah.
It got busted, but you weren't there.
But I wasn't there.
But your whole crew went down. I remember that. You fucking snake in the grass.
You ratted everyone.
Okay. But yeah, Frank Black basically said, like, yeah, they were paying like hundreds of dollars for this shitty, and I know exactly what that feels like, for this shitty fucking practice space. And eventually they just moved the practices to David's house, where his mom would, I think they would practice in the garage, and then mom would make like sandwiches for the band.
Yeah,
like,
he said he had to get all the children he had tied up out of there before they came over, but it was cool afterwards.
It does kind
of
look like
he had to move them to the basement.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. But, yeah, I just like the picture of the mom coming out like, all right, now you kids play nice music. And they're like, thanks, Mrs. Lovering.
I heard she was real hot like a cougar, though.
Whoa. It's like a Mountain Dew commercial.
Like a mountain lion.
But, yeah, so, yeah, see? But yeah, so they're practicing at David's house, and then they start touring in the Boston area, and they start getting kind of a buzz about themselves because, mm-hmm. you know, the music that they're playing is just such a weird combination of fucking music.
It's not punk. It's not rock. It's like just...
It's not punk. It's not rock.
Well, maybe it is rock.
I mean, it's rock, but it's kind of like folky.
Yeah, folky-ish, yeah.
Folky, and it's also got kind of...
heavy and just weird at times.
Kind of like a Spanish guitar style yeah. to it, too, which is really kind
of... And like he was singing a bunch of songs in Spanish.
Yeah, and they're also singing songs in Spanish, songs about incest, songs about, like, religion.
Vampires.
Just weird fucking shit. And, yeah, so, of course, they're going to get a buzz because nobody sounds like them. And they eventually acquire a band manager, this guy Kim... Or, Jesus Christ... It's Kim Deal and Ken Doe's. Ken Goes, sorry.
Oh.
Who at the time was also managing this band Throwing Muses. And what's significant about this band Throwing Muses is they're, you know, the Pixies go with this manager, and the other band that he's managing is signed to this English label 4AD, which is the first American band to be signed to 4AD. And then they pick up the Pixies. And the producer at the time, I'm sorry, what was his name? Gary Smith was a well-known producer and basically was the one to get them recorded on their first demo.
Like that's the purple tape?
Yeah. The way that I had – you feel me? Yeah, so he does the purple tape.
And that's like 18 songs and it's basically the first two albums? Or first three almost?
17 songs. It's basically the first four albums. Ooh. Yeah, there's a lot of shit that goes on that. But anyway, so – he's with Ken Goes, then they meet the producer, and they start this purple tape. And basically, they record this demo, 17 tracks, like you were saying. And, dude, it's fucking amazing, front to back, dude. Purple tape is probably the best thing that they ever put together, honestly.
Yeah, it's weird that out of the songs they pick the ones for Come On Pilgrim. Mm-hmm. They only pick 8 of them, which I thought was weird. Like, why'd they pick so little?
Yeah, so, and that's the thing. So, Come On Pilgrim... is their first EP that gets them any recognition is out of this purple tape. Bunch of songs off of Surfer Rosa, bunch of songs off of Doolittle, and even a couple songs off of Bossa Nova I saw too. I was like, wow, that's fucking Subculture. Oh, dude, such a good version of that song on there. But I think that they only picked those 8 because they knew, like, you know, let's not bust a nut too quick with all these songs. Like, we got some really good songs.
Let's get better, maybe, that we can make them better.
Exactly. And that's basically what they do. So then...
Let's get tighter.
So the guy that owns 4AD is this guy, Ivo Watts Russell.
What?
At the time, he's probably most famous for producing the Cocteau Twins. And the Cocteau Twins were like the biggest indie thing in England at the time too. They eventually got really huge. So this guy has a lot of like cred. So the pick. So initially he gets the Pixies demo. He doesn't get it whatsoever, and he just rejects it. But the secretary listens to it slash his girlfriend, mm-hmm. and she basically annoys the shit out of him, and he signs them. That's basically how it looked to me on paper.
The only way,
yeah. She brushed her teeth in front of him, and yeah. Anyway, so
I don't know about that one.
Yeah, that's gonna get. Yeah, so Evo takes or Ivo or whatever takes
Evo Knievo
8 of the songs off the Purple Tape, and he mixes them into Come On Pilgrim. And before the album even drops, he has the band go in and start recording Surfer Rosa.
All right.
So,
what's on the cover of the Come On Pilgrim? Just a hairy back fat guy? Is that?
Yeah. There's I forget what the picture is, but there's a picture that they took that's supposed to be a sexy lady.
It looks like it.
And they did the same picture, except they did a fat guy with a hairy back on the cover.
All right.
Yeah. It's a cool cover, though. I like it.
Ew. Makes me sick.
It would make you sick. And then,
that is a lot of hair.
Yeah. It looks like Frank Black wearing a sweater. Coming.
Yeah.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit.
A little bit there. So the EP gets released, and it peaks at number 5 on the UK indie charts. And it's there for 29 weeks. So
damn.
They are initially a phenomenon in England. They really loved them from the beginning. And just thought that was really cool. And I, you know, before researching this, I always knew that the Pixies were bigger in Europe first than came here. But I didn't. I always figured it was because America hated the sound. But when I looked into this, I found out it's because they were so much better than anybody thought they kind of were. Mm-hmm. So they thought their only option was this indie label. And because they signed with the indie label, they don't have a distribution deal with anywhere else.
All right. So that's why.
So they start off
so
being.
No one could really hear it.
No one could hear them. Yeah. So I saw this interview with Frank Black. He was like, it was so weird going home. And nobody knew who we were, but we were being played on the radio in England. They would have to send over magazines to us about all this like crazy hottest new band in the world. They were basically Nirvana in England. And I'm like, that is fucking crazy, dude.
That is wild.
Yeah. And nobody in the States.
That's probably the best way to have it.
Yeah.
So you can go back to your home and fucking not get recognized.
Another schlub and nobody cares. Uh-huh. And their look is very much they can blend in with their crowd, too. They don't.
Maybe not in England, but in America for sure.
In America for sure, yeah. You know?
Definitely Massachusetts.
Dude. Wicked Massachusetts, dude. But, so then that album actually doesn't make it to, or I'm sorry, that EP, Come On Pilgrim, doesn't make it to the States until after Surfer Rosa is a thing.
Damn.
Yeah. And, so me personally, I fucking think the EP is perfect all the way through. I don't know how you feel about it. It's got the song Caribou on it.
Yeah, I love Caribou. I love a bunch of songs on it. Holiday.
Yeah, this
on
ain't
it.
No holiday.
But some of them are a little like, whatever. It's the one about, like Lou Reed.
I like that song.
Yeah, I hate that one.
I've been tired.
Yeah, so certain ones I don't
I
really care for.
I want to be a singer like a Lou Reed. I like Lou Reed, she said.
Yeah, I
it's kind of got some weird shit on it. But Caribou might be, if not my favorite Pixie song, the second favorite Pixie song. It's so good, dude.
I like it.
And Ed is Dead is on that one, too.
Yeah.
Ed is. So at this time, the Pixies are working with former Big Black frontman. You know that band Big Black? Punk band from the 80s?
It was Robin Big Black. Yeah, Robin
exactly.
Big. I love that show.
Very good show.
So ridiculous.
Ridiculous. So the frontman for Big Black, Steve Albini, was sent to produce Surfer Rosa with a $10,000 budget. And he only received $1,500 and refused to take a royalty check off the CD.
Whoa, what an idiot.
No, he refused because he feels that as a producer, I get paid for my work. And it's insulting to the band to continue to get paid when they're the ones that wrote the songs, you know?
No,
I thought that was cool.
He's an idiot.
Okay, so he's an idiot. He did have something mean to say about the Pixies later, something about I've never met a band.
Yeah, I heard that. I think he said it on What the Fuck podcast, maybe. Yeah.
I never met a band more willing. I never met a cow more willing to be dragged around by its nose ring. I was like, oh, like in reference to the Pixies letting the management do everything for them and mold them into what they are. I'm like,
really?
Yeah, I thought that was kind of weird, dude. But then he later, I think he like retracted the statement. He's like, oh, I didn't mean that. And and what's cool is I love Surfer Rosa. And this might be, I think this is my favorite album by far, because I just love the production quality of it. It just sounds so fucking good, dude. I don't know, how do you feel about it?
The production, I never really thought of it.
Really?
I guess it's good, yeah. I love all the songs.
There's,
but I never really thought.
So the biggest song by the Pixies is
Where's My Mind?
Where's My Mind is on Surfer Rosa.
Yeah.
And Kim Deal's backing vocals were recorded in a bathroom. And it was like all this like weird stuff. Like I think Billy Corgan said that he was inspired by the drum sound off of that album, right, which I thought was kind of cool. And the drums do sound fucking sweet.
Oh yeah,
sweet
when it first starts off, a Bone Machine, it's just amazing.
And although David Levering does seem like a fucking creep,
he's a great drummer.
He's an amazing drummer.
Mm-hmm. I love
his
drumming.
Exactly what to do with that with that sound, and I got
He didn't overdo it, but he did it enough perfectly. It's he's really good at it. Everyone in the band is amazing.
Yeah.
We'll make fun of them for sure, but they all are amazing at what they do.
What they do, yeah, without a doubt.
Even they're all individually pieces of garbage.
I wouldn't say.
Except for Santiago. He seems best.
He seems normal, yeah. I wouldn't say garbage. They all seem kind of crazy, maybe, but I don't think they're, like, garbage, but...
Oh, Mike, getting into technicals.
Yeah, splitting hairs here, right? So, Kim... also on the album, the song Something Against You was recorded through, the vocals were recorded through a distorted amplifier.
All right.
Something I got.
Yeah, I could see that for sure.
And the album is just a blend of just, some of the songs are kind of have like a ballad feel to them, but they're not really ballad. Like Where Is My Mind kind of is a ballad sort of. You know,
I could see, yeah, because it's slower.
It's slower, and it's kind of got that like
Gigantic is kind of like that too.
Yeah, and Gigantic is the. So this is what's interesting. So it's Frank Black is basically writing all the songs here, but Gigantic is the only single off this album.
Go ahead. You were saying,
but Gigantic's released as a single. And it's like their biggest charting single. So there's like this weird thing where people kind of immediately go to Kim Deal. Like they really love her.
Yeah, she's the... Doesn't she mostly all sing that song only?
Gigantic?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's her singing lead.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, so I think this kind of pisses off Frank or Charles or
yeah,
Black Francis
that.
Because he's not the star. You know what I mean? And I feel
like I wrote the song. I should get the credit.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah. And but for me, I'm like, Kim added that thing to the band that they couldn't do without her, you know?
Absolutely.
She, she was so fucking awesome. But what's it called? So Surfer Rosa ends up reaching number two on the UK indie charts. And now they're like the biggest, like the hottest band in England kind of thing. And meanwhile... The album is only available as an import in the U.S.
Ugh.
How fucking crazy is that?
So it's like twice as expensive?
Yeah. It's twice as exactly because there's no distribution deal. It's the independent thing sending it to...
That's crazy.
Yeah, that's fucking nuts, dude. So you have to be like a serious music nerd to fucking even know the Pixies are if you're in the U.S. at this point, you know?
Yeah.
That's fucking crazy, man. So then they begin a tour and they start off as the opening act for Throwing Muses.
All right.
Right. But by the end of the tour, they're headlining the fucking tour.
Like MC Hammer.
They MC Hammered Throwing Muses.
I mean, I guess it doesn't seem too hard.
Yeah. And
we've never heard of them. I never.
And, I think Charles was saying that the first place that they've truly broke was like the Netherlands, maybe. That they were just fucking huge there and everybody knew who they were. I just thought that was crazy. But then they take the tour to North America And while they're in Boston on that leg of the tour, they record a demo, which is titled Whore at this point. And that's apparently another biblical reference too, because it's supposed to reference the whores of Babylon. Mm-hmm. Or the whore of Babylon, yeah. Something weird like that. I don't know. So the label decides that they're going to send them a new producer, this guy Gil Norton, and he comes out to Boston, and they have a budget of $40,000 to record their next album, which ends up being called Doolittle.
Mm-hmm.
And so Norton and Black Francis don't really get along at first, and it's basically...
It seems like most people in Black Francis don't get along.
It does seem that way, right? And it's because they just disagree about, like, the arrangements on the album and stuff and, like, the length of the songs. I think at one point Frank Black takes him to a record store and gives him a Buddy Holly CD or a Buddy Holly album. He's like, see, good enough for Buddy Holly. 2 minutes, good enough for the Pixies. You know? Because the guy was like, no, you can't put out a song that's a minute and 56 seconds. They're like, yes, we can. Fuck yourself. and let's see here. It was crazy, too. Is that I think the album was only recorded in 3 weeks, Doolittle, and Surfer Rosa was only 2 weeks too. All
right.
So they busted both these fucking classic albums.
Absolutely.
Back to back. And this is where Black Francis and Kim start to fucking hate each other.
Oh, yeah.
Much, you know, and Kim's also what's it called? She is getting fucked up with the alcohol. She's getting fucked up with the drugs, too, here. Her and her husband split up, too, in 88.
Mm.
And, yeah, I know, she's just starting to become, like, a fucking wreck, you know? I was trying to look more into her and Frank Black fighting, but I couldn't really find too many specific instances.
Exactly, yeah.
There's one instance where Frank gets so pissed off at her that he throws a guitar at her.
I saw that. And then there's another time she refused to go on stage and refused.
Almost got fired. Yeah, almost got fired. Right, that's fucking nuts, dude. Yeah. To be about to break it big and you guys
and just
squabbling
having
about
to do that. Yeah.
Yeah, dude. Crazy. So then in 89, the band secured a U.S. distribution deal with Elektra Records 2 weeks before the album was released. And it's because an Elektra Records rep saw them open for Jesus and Mary Chain.
Mm-hmm.
And was like, oh, my God, this is, I can't believe
better it. Than Jesus and Mary Chain.
Yeah, pretty much. Oh, my God, Jesus Mary Chain's the best thing ever. How does this beat this? and then the album is released in April, and it reaches number 8 in UK albums, not just indie, UK albums.
Oh, damn.
Yeah, so that's pretty fucking significant. Jesus. And, yeah, so they are like a straight-up pop band in England.
Yeah, they. I saw in the documentary they got 3 sold-out shows in record-breaking time at this place in England.
Mm-hmm.
They got, like, these certificates or plaques for it and stuff.
Yo, yeah, I saw that.
They
were
the fastest-selling act in this place.
I think that's why they called the tour Pixie Sell Out. Mm-hmm. I thought that was a cool tour name. I'm like, all right, that's cool.
I mean, the Who did it, like, 40 years before you, but all right.
But in the U.S., they actually reach number 98 in the Billboard 100.
There you go. That's just as good.
It's good enough. When you're that big in England and Europe and shit, mm-hmm. it's good enough in America. Okay.
Hell yeah. This is the song. This is the album that definitely broke them out. It's, mm-hmm. Like I said earlier, the most poppiest.
This is where I start to fall off with the...
Mm-hmm. They were off like a prom... Wait, what?
No, what was I going to say? This is where I kind of start to fall off with the Pixies, Doolittle.
This, no, I think this is just when they start getting, this is when they're starting to really get there and get
really?
Good. Yeah.
I was reading a lot of people saying that this is where they start to get good, and I'm like, nah, this
yeah, kinda.
For me, this is where they start to get away from the weirdness a little bit.
Yeah. Know?
There's weird shit on this
album.
Yeah,
that's why I kind of like it.
But, you know, where are what's on this one? Monkey Gone to Heaven.
Yeah, you got Debaser, Wave mm-hmm. of Mutilation, I Bleed, Monkey Gone to Heaven, Hey.
Hey. And Hey is, dude, that's such a classic
oh, God.
Fucking song.
I was on this, a dating app, and I saw a girl liked Pixies. So I messaged her, just writing, Hey. A couple days later, she gets back. She's like, oh, I've been trying to meet you. And I'm like, all right, she knows what I'm talking about. She's
yeah.
doing it. So I write back. Must be a devil between us, ... I'm going to stop here before he starts talking about whores.
And she responded, but she didn't respond. She just never got
Yeah, of course not.
Stopped. Once I mentioned whores in my bed, she kind of stopped.
Whores in my bed. Yeah. That's pretty fucking good, though, dude.
Yeah, it was.
Match made in heaven.
Until the whores.
Yeah. And then, yeah, this is actually where now they're on tour for the Fuck or Fight tour,
mm-hmm.
which is appropriately named between Kim and fucking Frank Black.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
It's like, all right, either fuck or fight each other at this point because Jesus Christ. But by the end of the tour, the band.
Do you think maybe Frank Black did want to fuck her and that maybe caused some tension too?
I kind of was thinking some of that a little bit, that Frank Black wanted her and she was just like, fuck you, like just drunk, you know,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
Fuck you, Frank Black, you piece of shit. Hurls a beer at him. He's like, oh,
God,
just,
she's getting sexier the more you're talking about her.
Know,
like
I'm
this.
Just trying to try out for the team.
All I know. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's, yeah. Yeah, at this point, yeah, he also, yeah, this is where he, like, on this Fuck or Fight tour, this is where he throws the guitar at her, and she gets fired from the band, like, for a minute, too. So what happens is, like...
What year is this? No, 90...
89.
89?
Right, 89. So what happens is, from the way I was reading it, Frank, or Charles, or Frank, yeah, that guy, Frank Black, he basically is, like, putting Kim in her place, like, no, we're not going to play your songs. No, I don't care what you write, no. And her retort to him is like, our only fucking single is Gigantic and I'm singing on it. Can I fucking do a song now? And he just won't let her have that creative control. So
is this when she starts doing more Breeders and recording the first Breeders album?
So this is so what happens is the band moves to LA and she stays in the UK and she
in the UK or in Massachusetts?
UK.
Oh damn.
Yeah, yeah. So she's in the UK. And she starts working again with Steve Albini.
Oh, all right.
And they do that first Breeders album. And by the way, the album's called Pod. That album's fucking amazing.
The album's good.
It's really good. You know the song Iris on there?
Yeah. And I don't want the world to see me.
Yes.
Oh, it's so good.
Yeah. No. Breeders, Iris. I'll put a link to it. It's so fucking good. Oh, my God. Such a good song.
No, that's the next one. That's Last Splash.
Yeah. Splash into my.
That one's good, yeah.
Yeah, that's a good one, too. The Breeders are actually more Pixie sounding than Frank Black solo, in my opinion.
I guess Breeders is better than Frank Black's stuff because I got a bunch of his and it's just like nothing.
Yeah, it's some of it's okay.
Los Angeles is good.
I don't even like that song.
And I Gotta Move is another good one, but most of the other ones I don't care. Like Teenager of the Year I Am is just boring.
Yeah, it's not very.
A couple of the other ones.
But so, yeah, so they're out in LA and they start working on the next album and she's in the UK and doing the Breeders thing. And the Breeders eventually become a platinum-selling fucking group before the Pixies.
Oh, damn.
Yeah, and...
Yeah, because they had that big hit single.
Yeah, Cannonball.
Cannonball.
Yeah. And then she eventually goes to L.A. because initially she's fired because she's like, okay, the way I look at it is like, okay, if I can't write songs for the Pixies, then I'm going to go start a band.
Yeah.
And Frank Black goes, fuck you, you're fired, you know? But the rest of the, it seemed like the other two guys, David and Joey, want her back in the band.
Yeah. Cause they're like, this is what's making us money and this is what's doing it. She's what's good. You're good too, Frank, but she also, we need the both of you.
Yeah. It's so crazy that it's like always stuck in Frank Black's craw that he can't fucking,
just eat donuts 24/7.
Get out from underneath the Pixies. He even says it in.
Get out from underneath him.
Yeah. There are parts in the documentary where they're just filming him and he's in his underwear on the phone. I was like, why do I have to
taking his shirt
this?
Off and rolling into bed like a fucking beached whale. Yeah.
Yeah.
We don't need to see that.
There was like five or six scenes with him with his shirt off. And I was just like, come on, what the fuck? And he's just sitting there just like, oh, and his undies just like.
That's how I didn't
belly.
Think it was him on the cover of Come On Pilgrim because he wasn't hairy.
Yeah.
Unless all his hair fell out. Was that
No, I know what it is. I forgot.
Cut it out.
But yeah, so eventually she joins the band in LA and they had an issue with
alopecia.
That's fine, yeah. So she joins the band out in LA and they have initially have an issue with recording out there and they don't want to tell the record label about it because after 6 p.m., they start picking up pirate radio stations on their fucking equipment while they're trying to record.
And this is when they're recording Bossa Nova?
Bossa Nova, yeah. So by chance, Frank Black actually runs into guess who? Just take one guess.
David Byrne.
Nope.
I don't know.
Rick Rubin.
Oh!
Yep, Rick Rubin again suggests a place where they can record. And they get to finish the album because off of Rick Rubin helping them find another studio. And we're like, that is fucking crazy, Rick Rubin.
Rubin does it again.
Yeah. Fucking man. He is music. I don't know how that's possible, but he's just that.
He just dips his finger in something.
Yeah. That's all he needs to, that's all he needs to do, dude. But they released Bossa Nova. It gets to number three. I have on my notes in the Ukraine, but I think it's
UK.
UK. I think it's a spell check. I'm like, why would it be significant that they got to number three in the Ukraine?
I fucking love this album. You said this is kind of, you don't like this one?
Yeah, I don't
so know. Much. Oh, I love this
I
one.
I like maybe three songs off of this album.
Dig for Fire.
Mm.
Oh, come on. It's amazing. Mm.
I like Valoria.
Valoria is great. That's all over the world. Song. I like that one. The first song is no singing.
So you know, before I did the research, I didn't know that Kim Deal didn't have this much involvement with the band at this point.
It kind of seems like it because she's not really on these songs as much.
Yeah, she's not really on this album. And I remember listening to this, and I couldn't put my finger on what I didn't like about the album back in the day. And now I realize that there's no Kim on it. Yeah. Like she's barely on this, and you could tell that she has less of an input. With, you know, even the bass and everything.
Yeah.
But yeah.
What I like about this album, it does sound like 1990 for some reason. Mm-hmm. I listen to it and I just picture 1990. It's so of its time and like...
Because a band like the Pixies, it's crazy that they basically inspired the whole sound of the 90s. Because from everybody from Nirvana, David Bowie said that he was a huge Pixies fan.
Absolutely. Radiohead.
Radiohead.
Gigantic
And I was going to say, even the band that did like the theme song to the show Pete and Pete on Nickelodeon back in the day.
Polaris. I'm sure they were.
Like, everything, like commercials, everything sounded...
Shadowy Men from a Shadowy Planet, the Kids in the Hall theme.
Kids in the Hall theme. Everything
that
had that Pixies.
Very Pixies.
Surfer, kind of weird sounding.
Alternative surf rock.
Because they
60s-ish
created that format of that soft, loud, and every pop band picked it up at this point, you know. But the album, so I don't really care for the album, but the album does reach number three in the UK, like I was saying, and it also does number 70 on the 100 billboards.
All right,
it's actually
they're getting there.
They're starting to get radio play and college play, and people are really loving this band.
Yeah.
I think Here Comes Your Man is starting to become like a very big college kind of sensation. And that song, the drums at the end, that oh my God, so good, man. Because you don't expect that sound to come in at the end of that song, you know?
It's not that crazy. Kind of fits.
Where he does the double time at the end.
Yeah.
I think, I don't know, it just worked for me. I thought that was really genius and simple, you know? And also the Joey's lead guitar, the simplistic lead that's its own melody, and he's not shredding on the guitar, becomes very popular in that sound. And it's more about just playing with feedback dynamics and shit like that. I just thought it was really cool. So then 91, the group records Tremblement. And
this one doesn't have as good as songs as I feel.
It sounds more like the Pixies.
All right.
With its kind of more punk rocky kind of
sounding. UMass kind of has like a straight rock kind of feel.
Right.
It's less Pixies-ish, I almost feel.
Yeah, and that, you know what a lot of people say about this album? This is more or less Frank Black's first solo album.
All right, I can see that.
Yeah. And to be honest with you, it's not a bad album. It just doesn't sound like the Pixies.
Yeah, it's not their worst.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not the worst thing.
Head Carrier is, let's just say that now.
Yeah, Head Carrier is the worst thing. And then after this album, I don't like anything that the Pixies have done at all. But
so
93, so 92, the band is touring with U2.
Ooh, just like Rage Against the Machine.
Yeah, and because they're touring with U2 and they're doing these like stadium concerts, you know, because U2 is obviously a huge band, and
kind of makes sense though. U2 and Pixies,
it does, but. I think I read something where, like, even Black Francis was saying, like, yeah, U2 was kind of like the antithesis of the Pixies, and now we're touring with them. Like, you know, we weren't trying to be rock stars. We were just trying to play good
music.
But
that just shows that you're your own, I don't know, kind of entity.
Yeah.
And that they're going to put you on because you're also an entity, and I don't know.
No, I know what you mean.
It kind of makes sense that they're with them.
Yeah, because
you're both kind of adult alternative in a way.
Yeah.
So it's that, but you're, the alternative is because you're nothing like fucking anyone else.
It's crazy to think, like, how many bands, like, where we're at right now, 92, they're on tour with you two, right? Like, Zoo TV tour. Thank you, Richie. It's crazy to think, like, how many bands now all of a sudden sound like the Pixies. Like,
yeah.
1992. It's like Nirvana. When did Nevermind come out?
Nevermind came out in 91.
91.
Bleach came out 89.
So, I feel...
So, they probably, around the same time of hearing the Pixies, Nirvana came out. So, maybe it's not so much a ripoff as much as that was just the sound that was going to be big around that time. Just culmination of everything else people were into.
I think that nobody else sounded like that before the Pixies.
Oh, yeah. I'd say that, too.
They, like, they created,
but they kind of, you could kind of...
Like, they created that, like, pop formula for the 90s, I feel.
Yeah. Who's Could Do kind of did that, though, too, like
Who's
they said.
Who's Could Do did, yeah.
They're kind of like that, I feel.
And that was, like, another thing, too. I saw, like, songs like There Goes My Gun was originally supposed to be fast, like a Who's Could Do song.
Oh, there you go.
And that would have sounded like a Who's Could Do song if it was fast. But they told them to slow it down because it would sound more like that.
What do you like the better, the Wave of Mutilation, the fast one, or the UK slow one?
I like them both equally for different reasons.
Yeah, right.
It depends. Like, you know what it, you know what it is? The song Wave of Mutilation off of Surfer Rosa is, like, it. The lyrics are so fucking depressing. Because, you know what I mean? It's about suicide, the song, more or less. But the fast one is so badass that... like, the chorus is amazing.
Wait, isn't Wave of Mutilation's off Debaser? Off of Doolittle.
Oh, Wave of Mutilation's off of Doolittle. Yeah, you're right. I'm sorry. So, yeah. I don't know. You know what it is? The slow one came out in between Surfer Rosa and...
All right. I don't know which one I like. I like maybe the fast one, but the slow one's fucking great, too.
And another name that keeps coming up on the podcast, the UK version of that song is John Peel. That's where that came from, the Peel sessions. That we about. Yeah. We got to do an episode on John Peel because he's got a lot of interesting bands that he kind of helped break.
And Key. Key and Peel, both of them.
Key and... Don't forget about Peel.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no, Key, I meant. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, you're right. You're right, right, right. But, it's just crazy to think, like, because I was just thinking, like, R.E.M. started sounding like fucking the Pixies after this, you know?
But they kind of, also, too, I could see kind of sounding like them around then and before-ish. Even, what about, like, I almost said Flaming Lips, but I meant to say Violent Femmes. They kind of
sound like
the
Pixies. Yeah.
Kind of feel.
You know what I think all of it came from? Is like in the 80s, there was that revival of Lou Reed and the Velvet Underground.
Yeah.
That because all those albums that didn't get released that the Velvet Underground recorded came out in the mid 80s. All
right.
Or maybe early 80s. But it was after Lou Reed got famous and then Velvet Underground.
I could definitely see that.
You know? Because the Pixies, you can arguably say, are the Velvet Underground of the 80s. You know, they, like I was saying before, Velvet Underground's to punk as Pixies are to grunge.
Yeah.
So it makes perfect sense.
Yeah,
but yeah. So with this U2 tour,
what Korn is to nu metal.
So what sucks for the Pixies is like the U2 tour would have broke them, like Nirvana superstardom. Mm. But Nirvana came out. And I kind of feel that, you know, all this hatred that Kurt had for himself was that he kind of thought of himself as just a ripoff, and he took away the fame from
the Pixies. He said they didn't want to release Smells Like Teen Spirit because it was too much of a Pixies ripoff. But I never would have thought it sounded like that. And even now, after I hear that, I listen to it, I'm like, this sounds nothing like the Pixies.
The formula sounds the same.
Oh, the formula, yeah. That's but like the saying, actual sound is nothing like it, I feel like.
It's like kind of screamy. It's kind of screaming, but melodic.
But yeah, the melodies aren't as good
is,
as the Pixies do it, I
but
feel.
They still do
more about melody.
But they still are doing simple
rock.
Simple rock, like simple guitar lead on purpose, playing with feedback dynamic, and also they do that soft loud kind of thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I guess I could see it that way, but I just musically and self and
I
know
I can agree with that. The Pixies are
like
way more like musically like complex.
Yeah.
They are, and that's another thing too. Like going back and listening to them, I'm like, oh my god, dude, it's crazy that a band can make simple sounds so hard.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, Kim's bass tone is perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Even Joey Santiago, when he plays, you know, it's like you can say, like, oh, yeah, it's just a really simple lead. It's only a couple notes. But I'm like, you're not listening to, like, him hitting the other
notes. You're not listening to the notes he's not playing.
Yeah. I could do that from home. Yeah. But, yeah, it's just crazy that, yeah, nobody cares about the Pixies because grunge happened because of them.
Right? Yeah.
And by 93, Charles does an interview with the BBC, doesn't consult the band, and just tells the BBC that the band's over. He just tells them that the Pixies are done.
Just on the radio.
On the radio. And then he sends the band a fax saying that the band is over. And I'm like, oh, man, that's a rough way to break up the Pixies.
Yeah.
Jesus. But then, you know, Kim does the Breeders. They do that Cannonball song, and they become a platinum selling group.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah, and then from 94 to 2003, it's really, you know, Black Francis turns to Frank Black. He tries to put out a bunch of solo albums.
And the Catholics.
Yeah.
And then there's some other Frank One, Black and the...
I forget.
Who gives a fuck?
Yeah, exactly. Kim is just keeps doing stuff with the Breeders. Now her sister's in the band with her,
mm-hmm.
In the Breeders at this point. But then she like goes to rehab because she gets too fucked up with drugs and alcohol. Mm-hmm. Joey lends his guitar work to a couple Frank Black solo albums.
Yeah, they stayed friends. It seems like all the guys in Pixies.
I feel like Joey and Frank always thought it was of it as their band.
Yeah, yeah. You know? All right. Yeah, makes sense. So yeah, he always helped them out and even. Open up for Frank Black. He had David Lovering doing his magic because he gets into magic now.
And that's what I was saying. Yeah, and then David becomes a professional musician.
Magician.
Magician, yeah. Well, he went from professional musician to magician. That's kind of fucking creepy, dude. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's just weird. And then 2000...
And now he's going to try to become a mathematician just so he can get all of them down. All the issues down.
So he can figure out how he lost all his money. Because in 2003... everyone's doing okay at this point. Like they do basically are like 10 years apart from each other. You know, that grunge sound has come and gone and
come and gone.
And yeah, they,
Santiago is also, recording stuff for like soundtracks. Like,
yeah, he's filmed soundtracks and TV documentaries and shit like that, you know? And so they all get back together again in 2003. And then they do that Loud, Quiet, Loud documentary. Yeah. That we're
they just do
about.
Start doing shows and having reunion.
And, you know, the band, I think we were saying this before, but the band was saying, like, they didn't really like the fucking documentary. Yeah, we were saying this, that, you know, it didn't, like, put them in the right light.
Yeah, it kind of did make them look. I mean, it made a good watch.
Yeah.
But it wasn't the greatest
thing. It is a really
interesting
documentary.
It's kind of like Some Kind of Monster with Metallica. It's a great watch, but it doesn't make them look great.
Yeah, I would agree.
You're going to be entertained as fuck watching it.
Yep. And the one thing that they did say that they liked about it is that it showed what they truly were like with each other. And you could see that they don't talk to each other, really.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very strange, man. And I saw this interview, too, where Frank Black, very early on, some English reporter was asking him if he felt like he needed to have a one-on-one connection with his fans. And he's like, no. I don't have any responsibility to a one-on-one
That's
connection.
Great.
You know what I mean?
With them, yeah.
Yeah, he's just like, my job is to entertain them, and their job is just to pay the ticket price for the show.
Yeah.
You know? And that's I don't expect anything of them. They don't expect anything of me. That's what it should be. So I just thought that was interesting. And you could see that in the documentary that people are like, yo, Frank Black, I love you.
I live for you. He's like, thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot. And he just keeps going, yeah. And
he doesn't seem like he's big into being a rock star.
Yeah, he doesn't like.
He's like kind of like a family man too.
Yeah, I you know what I like about Frank Black about how honest he is.
Yeah,
and at one point in the documentary, he's trying to pitch a solo album to like a record executive, and he's just like saying to the producer before the pitch, he's like, "Well, here you go. We're not going to get it because I can't get out from under the shadow of the Pixies. I'll never be as big as the Pixies, no matter what I do."
Mm-hmm.
So when he's with the record executive and he's pitching a solo album, the guy's like, "Hey, so I hear that you guys are all getting back together and starting tour. Like, what's going on with the solo album, you know?" And he has to be like, "Yeah, I don't know. We'll see what happens. I'm kind of trying to push them, you know what I mean? But really, he's just trying to sell his solo album." I'm like, oh, that is so cool that they put that in the documentary. I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, and it's weird that they go for like another 10 years without even recording a new album.
Yeah. So then they're
on and off touring.
And that's what happens. Kim sticks it out with the band for 10 years. And then 2013, she leaves just because.
Right when Indie Cindy comes out.
Well, the way I understood it is that she didn't like the songs that. Oh, by the way, they recorded the four of them. Another song in 2004.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Bam Thwack.
Yeah, yeah.
Which isn't a very good song. I don't really care for
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I heard it and I was like, eh.
It's, yeah, it's forgettable. But she leaves the band in 2013 because, again, Black Francis doesn't really want her to put her songs on Pixies albums.
Again.
And
which would have been good because these albums are kind of suffering a little bit. I mean, I like Bag Boy. It's one of my favorite Pixies songs even.
Really?
But everything else, yeah. It's kind of just like, eh, whatever.
You know, she was even saying, she's like, I just didn't like the. Or I don't think she actually said this, but a lot of people speculate that she just didn't like the songs that Frank Black was writing at that point, you know. And then she's replaced by Kim Shattuck of the Muffs. That doesn't work out very long because Kim Shattuck's in the band for a year. And then she's replaced by Paz Lenshatten. Paz Lenshatten? I guess so. She's the bass player from Perfect Circle.
Yeah. And now I think she's officially a member, they said.
Yeah. But I also saw a thing where Joey said that there's always an open door for Kim to come back.
Yep.
And then, yeah, like you said, they release Indie Cindy. Dude, I don't like anything off this album. If it was a new band, I would be like, oh, cool, this is a band that's trying to sound like the Pixies.
Yeah.
And that's what it sounds like. It just sounds like them trying to sound like the Pixies.
Yeah,
and then
I agree.
In 2016, they put out that Head Carrier.
Yeah. That's a hard listen.
That's a hard listen.
I listened to it a couple times. I'm like, I can't get it.
That almost sounds like a Weezer album, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Because it's unlistenable.
So, I mean, just to wrap.
And they're going on tour this summer, 2018.
I saw that, yeah. With Weezer, yeah.
I got the tickets. I told everyone to buy them. No one bought them on Groupon. They're $15 each, so I got four of them.
Really?
Yeah.
I'll go with you.
We'll see.
Oh.
Because the tickets are $60 each now.
Oh. Fuck, I should have got one when I had a chance.
Should have gotten four when you had a chance.
But here's the thing. I don't know if I want to go only because.
They're going to be playing the hits.
They'll be playing the hits, but. We were saying this before the show. I'm like, no Kim, no deal. Like, it's just not the Pixies, dude.
Yeah, but Laz might be all right. Paz, what's her name?
Paz. Yeah. I prefer Taz from ECW playing bass.
The Mendesian Devil.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I don't know. So, overall,
do you think it's possible they'll have another great album?
No.
No. What if Kim comes back?
Nope.
Just done.
They're done. For me.
Which really, they have enough amazing songs that they don't need to make anymore.
I would agree with that, too.
They just keep doing these, rotate, play some weird B cuts and shit and 1 year live, and, you know, it'll be fine.
It's crazy because the Pixies are one of my favorite bands. But again, like, I only like maybe like two albums worth of material, you know, between Purple Tape, Come On Pilgrim. Most of Doolittle and Surfer Rosa.
You're the worst.
Everything else, I'm like, I don't know. It just doesn't hit me the same way. You know what it is? His lyrics started getting a little bit more straightforward, and I just didn't like that.
Now, I think it's Bossa Nova, unless it's Trump. One of them is Winter Long, where Santiago sings the whole thing.
Oh, I've never heard that.
And I don't know if he wrote that,
because
then if he's letting him go on and sing his stuff but won't let Kim, or if actually Frank Black wrote it and let him sing it like he does Kim.
Oh,
I don't know.
Funny.
But, yeah,
no, it was definitely Frank Black that wrote it, because he has all the writing credit on that album.
All right.
Yeah.
Because, Winter Long.
So now he's writing songs and be like, you know what? Fuck Kim. You sing this song.
Yeah.
Wow. That's fucked up.
I think I want to say it's Winter Long, but Kim sings on it as well. May not be one of the songs he sings on it.
Yeah, I would love to see Kim back in the band, but she doesn't. I'm sure she looks at the band kind of like meh. Like you guys don't need to be doing this anymore. It's like the Red Hot Chili Peppers kind of.
Yeah,
where it's like you guys don't have to be the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
You have enough to chill out now.
Yeah, you're putting out new music, and that's kind of why she left, is because they wanted to do new music, and she's like, no, fuck that. Like we did enough music together. Let's just tour. But, yeah, that kind of wraps up the story.
Who do you got playing who?
So, for the movie, All right, so for Frank Black in the Pixies movie, I have Hank from Breaking Bad.
I don't know who that is.
The cop from Breaking Bad.
Oh, all right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. The brother?
Yeah, the brother-in-law, yeah.
Fuck yeah. No, that's the guy. Well, you have an old picture up.
And if we can't get Hank from... Let's do the new picture, most recent picture of him, Richie.
Well, I got Kim Deal. I mean, I got Frank Black. I got Michael Chiklis.
That's pretty fucking good. That's pretty fucking good.
Yep.
So the Thing from Fantastic Four. Uh-huh. Oh, that's pretty good. I like that. I also have Kyle.
I go with the commish, but all right.
Oh, the commish, too. That's true. and I think he was on the Shield, too, I believe. Yeah. And I also have Kyle Gass could play Frank Black.
Oh, my God, yes. The Kyle same Gass. Way he plays guitar and everything.
Yep. And then I was also thinking Alex Jones with a shaved head.
So any fat guy, yeah.
We need to goddamn debase these goddamn bastards. 1776 will commence again, says Frank Black.
As loud as hell. Yeah. She rings my bell.
Yeah, yeah. For Kim Deal, I said that Shannon Daugherty could play her.
All right. Yeah, that is a good one.
That's a good one, you know?
I couldn't think I said Kristen Stewart. She played... Joan Jett, so...
Oh, that's pretty good.
You could play Kim Deal if you could play Joan Jett, I feel.
Yeah, I can...
Amy Poehler? Kristen Stewart.
Kristen Stewart? Okay, I could see that.
She's a little too shaped, tall and lanky, I feel.
You're probably right about that. And then for Joey, I have... the guy's name is Noel Guglielmi. And he's the guy from Training Day.
I've never seen it.
He's also in Furious 7, I believe. And if anybody's seen Training Day, he plays the brother in Training Day. Like, you did what to my sister, man? Like,
I'm going to have to go with Manny Pacquiao for...
Ooh, Manny Pacquiao. That's good, dude.
For him.
Just because Manny Pacquiao is badass. And they're both Filipino.
Uh-huh.
I get it. That's pretty good. And then David Lovering, I've got...
Tom Hanks.
Oh, that's good.
Some reason I could see Tom Hanks playing him.
I have Bill Nye the Science Guy.
All right, yeah, I could see that. He would love to hear that.
Yeah, because I love that that he was opening up for Frank Black with magic
yeah.
and stuff, and he opened up...
Scientific magic shows.
Yeah, he has a lab coat on. He's like, what would you say? He had like a
getting 12-year-olds phone numbers.
Yeah, and weird, creepy
hey, Snapchat
like
me.
But, yeah, I guess that wraps up the Pixies. So, yeah, thank you, everybody, for listening in. Check out volleyballradio.com for the show notes. I'll have some links to some cool stuff about the Pixies up on there. And we also got more episodes up on there. Please subscribe to us on iTunes. Where are we on? Stitcher, YouTube.
Instagram
at Volleyball Radio, Twitter at Volleyball Radio. And, yeah, we'll see you guys next time. Thank you.
I was talking to Peachy Peach about Kissy Kiss. He bought me a soda. He bought me a soda. He bought me a soda. And he tried to molest me in the parking lot.